You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. It's one of our greatest fears, waking up in a small, confined space under 6 feet of dirt. During the 18th and 19th centuries, safety coffins were manufactured with bells attached to let passerbyers know if someone had been accidentally interred. Testing whether someone had passed on or not wasn't entirely scientific. It usually involved putting pepper and vinegar in the person's mouth or poking their feet with hot pokers. But no amount of testing was enough for Hannah Beswick, nor was a safety coffin. Beswick, like many folk living during the middle of the 18th century, had a pathological fear of accidentally being buried alive. It was kind of a problem, too. Thousands of people were buried alive in England and Wales during the 1700s and 1800s. She didn't want to go through that in the event of her possible death, and with good reason. A number of years before she died, Hannah witnessed the loss of her brother, or so she thought. She, along with the other mourners, watched as the lid was lowered over his coffin until someone saw his eyelids flicker. The family physician, Charles White, stepped in and examined the man and determined that he was not, in fact, dead. Hannah's brother awoke several days later, seemingly no worse for wear. But the young Miss Beswick was certainly affected. She consulted with Dr. White and asked him to make sure that she was never buried prematurely if she happened to pass away without warning. And this is where the details surrounding her last will and testament get a bit vague. As far as we know, she didn't explicitly ask Dr. White to do anything except keep her from going into the ground too soon. And so the good doctor took that to heart. When Hannah passed away in 1758, he made sure that her body was nowhere near a coffin or a gravesite. Instead, he had her embalmed. A mixture of turpentine and vermilion were injected into her veins, while camphor, nitre, and resin were put in place of her organs. Her body was then coated in fragrant oils, and the box she was stored in was filled with plaster of Paris to preserve her. By this point, Hannah Beswick was dead. There was no doubt about that. But she couldn't be placed in the ground yet. Rather, her corpse was held at the home of a family member before Dr. White took possession of her body. He put it on display in a clock case inside of his own house. She remained there until his death in 1813, at which point the late Miss Beswick was transferred to another doctor by the name of Olier, who donated her in 1828 to the up-and-coming Museum of the Manchester Natural History Society. Placed right inside the museum's entrance, Hannah became known as the Manchester Mummy and was placed next to an Egyptian and a Peruvian mummy. She became a big hit with visitors and the press, as there were several articles written about her after she entered the museum. The facility was eventually taken over by Manchester University in 1867, at which point it was decided that Hannah Beswick was officially dead. There was no chance of her coming alive anymore, and so it was time to lay her to rest. But it wasn't as simple as just placing her in a coffin and lowering her into the ground. According to an English law put in place in 1837, a medical examiner had to issue a certificate of death before a person could be buried. Since Hannah had died in 1758, a letter was sent to the Secretary of State, asking for permission to inter her remains. Permission was swiftly granted, and on July 22nd of 1868, Hannah Beswick was buried in an unmarked grave in a Manchester cemetery. She was 110 years old. Some claimed to see her ghost, clad in a black silk gown and a white cap, walking through the parlor of her old home. She was even spotted on the grounds after the house was torn down to make room for a factory. Hannah Beswick had a pathological fear of being buried alive, but her ghost never left. Maybe it wasn't about spending her final moments confined to a small box under 6 feet of dirt. Maybe she just had a really bad case a FOMO.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Running a marathon is no small feat. It takes months of practice, running almost every day and building up stamina until you're able to endure a full 26.2-mile journey from start to finish. The average time it takes to complete a marathon is anywhere from 4 to 5 hours. The fastest time ever taken to complete one was back in 2018, when Eliud Kipchoge from Kenya won the Berlin Marathon in just 2 hours, 1 minute, and 39 seconds. But what about the slowest marathon? I mean, sure, someone out there must hold the world record for the longest time ever taken to reach the finish line, right? For that, we need to look no further than Shizu Kanakuri. Shizu was born in Nagomi, Kumamoto, Japan in 1891. He started setting records when he was only 20 years old, most notably at the domestic qualifying trials for the 1912 Stockholm Olympics. Shizu finished a 25-mile marathon in just 2 hours, 32 minutes, and 45 seconds. Because of his performance, he became the first Japanese athlete to ever qualify for the Olympics. His fellow college classmates held a fundraiser to help him pay for his travel expenses to Sweden. And he did get there, eventually. It took 18 days, first by ship and then by Trans-Siberian Railway. It was an immense journey, one that required almost a week to recover. But on the day of the event, Shizu was ready. He held the weight and expectations of an entire nation on his shoulders, a pressure only exacerbated by the 77-degree Swedish heat. Between the travel and the weather changes, most of the runners came down with hypothermia. Even Kanakuri's own coach was beset with tuberculosis, so he wasn't able to train properly before the race. Regardless of his setbacks, though, Shizu was at the starting line on race day, and he took off running. He had the opportunity to not only set a new world record by winning this event, but also be the first Japanese competitor to win a gold medal at the Olympics. Hours after the race began, though, the first runners started to cross the finish line, and Kanakuri was nowhere to be found. He had simply vanished. Race officials tried looking him up, as did his coach and teammate, but he was just gone. So what happened to the miracle runner who was supposed to carry his country to Olympic victory? According to some reports, the intense heat caused him to pass out in a nearby garden. Others claim that he decided to pay a visit to an outdoor party that was going on. Regardless of the reason, Kanakuri was taken in by a kind Swedish family who fed him, gave him a change of clothes, and a place to sleep for the night. He was despondent over failing his team and his homeland, believing he had disappointed everybody and brought shame to them. He went back to Japan without telling anyone. He didn't even notify the race officials that he had returned. The Swedes started telling stories about the lost runner, how he was like a ghost looking for the finish line that would never come. And in a way, that was true. Shizu Kanakuri was so distraught over not finishing the Olympic race that he never stopped running. He made it his life's mission to restore honor to both himself and Japan by doing what he did best. And that meant teaching, founding other long-distance races, and building up a national interest in the sport. He also got women involved as well, and made an effort to train blind students by letting them guide themselves using a string tied from the starting line to the finish. Kanakuri was all about inclusion, but sadly, he never finished the race that had given him his start in the first place. And then, in 1967, Shizu got a call from a Swedish journalist. He invited the 76-year-old athlete to finish what he had started all those years ago. Kanakuri went back to Stockholm's Olympic Stadium, where 18,000 screaming fans and handfuls of journalists from all over the world watched as he finally crossed the finish line of a race that had started 54 years, 8 months, 6 days, 5 hours, 32 minutes, and 20.3 seconds earlier. He was awarded the Guinness World Record for longest time to complete a marathon, after which Kanakuri took a brief detour to visit the home of the family that had taken him in during the original race. The couple, of course, was long gone, but their son now lived there, and he served Kanakuri a glass of orange juice. When asked for a comment on finally completing his race, Kanakuri didn't give an impassioned speech about finishing what you've started, or seeing things through to the end. He simply told the truth. "It has been a long race, but then I got myself a wife, 6 children, and 10 grandchildren during it. And that takes time, you know?" Curious, to say the least. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show, and you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.